Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to CPA Review and... More you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're joining from. And thank you for listening to this episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. I'm your producer and director here at the Yeager Studios, Rob Medford, and together, we are bringing you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you're new to the show, I'd like to be the first to thank you for checking us out. We're excited to have you as part of our listenership. If you're here because you've already heard our show and you're a continued listener, we thank you for the ongoing support. It's always greatly appreciated. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about what Yeager CPA Review has to offer, check out our website at JaegerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you might have. The link and telephone number will be in the description of this episode. Here at Team Yeager, we're excited to tell you about our new Yeager CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no long-term commitment subscription format. But without any further delay, I'm going to pass the microphone on over to your host, Phil Yeager.
Well, Rob, thank you very much. And it's really nice today. You know, I got outside and it's actually not humid and it's June 21st. And it's also just a beautiful, they said rain today, but it's got blue skies. And I know where you are, Rob. Where are you? How's the weather there today?
80 and sunny, partly cloudy. Not
Thank
too
you.
Bad.
So, I mean, we are just lucky. It's going to be a nice weekend too, isn't it?
From what it looks like, it's supposed to be about the same as today. So, yeah, I'm hoping that the humidity levels stay down because I've got a wedding tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, look, have a good weekend, everyone. Thank you for listening and we'll see. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Today we have actually the title of our course, right? The title of our radio show is CPA Review and More. Now, today we're actually in the CPA Review area because we have as our guest the corporate controller at Inspiron. Did I pronounce it? How do you pronounce that, Keith?
Inspiron.
Inspiron Delivery Sciences. And we have, you heard him, Keith James. Keith is a CPA, holds an MBA, and is also a CGMA, another designation from the AICPA. And anyway, Keith, I will welcome you on this beautiful day. I hope you are well and wherever you are. And where are you, Keith?
Thank you very much. I am in the beautiful Poconos in northeastern Pennsylvania.
And all of us will give you the address where Keith is. So Poconos is very nice this time of year. And I'm sure Keith will be very happy to entertain whoever comes up there. Is that right, Keith?
Correct.
Good.
That is correct. Come hang out with me.
Hang out. He likes to hang. You like people to hang out with you. Good. Anyway, Keith, we decided you had expressed interest in being on our show. And we looked at your background. Excellent, you know, resume. Well, it's the LinkedIn, I guess. But anyway, according to this, you attended. All right. Well, in fact, tell us about your education. You know, while we got you here, what is your education background?
Sure. So my education background is a little backwards than most people in life. I hold an MBA from the University of Scranton in operational management with a minor in international logistics. Of course, I have my CPA. I did my degree at Strayer University online. I finished there, and then I went to Northampton Community College, which is a smaller community college here in the Bethlehem, Lehigh Valley, Pocono area. So a little backwards when I mean that is when I was at Synchronous, which was a publicly traded company, I was doing 10Ks, 10Qs, SEC reporting, equity reporting, and I did not even have a four-year college degree yet. So my education path was very different than most. Most people come out and, you know, get, you know, their four-year degree or do 6 years, do an MBA, do CPA, and then kind of go out in the corporate world. Mine was totally backwards. Very different career path, very different than most people in industry at this point. So, yeah, just a little backwards.
Good, good. No, that's fun. Let me ask you, when did you take the CPA exam?
That was in 2011, 2010, 2011.
And you're a CPA in what, Pennsylvania or Virginia?
Delaware.
Delaware. That was my next choice, Keith. Okay, now, so tell me this. I was looking at your LinkedIn background. Did you work in public accounting at all?
Never. I've never worked in public accounting.
So how did you, at that time when you took the CPA exam, what was the experience requirement in Delaware?
The experience requirement in Delaware was working with a CPA, and the CFO of Synchronous, Larry Irving, he was a CPA. So it was to sign off and that you had worked the amount of hours underneath that person. So working directly with him, I fulfilled that requirement.
And actually, I think that's the requirement now for most states. You know, usually it's, is it 1 year working under a CPA or with a CPA? Is that the,
you know, with the,
go ahead.
With the new rules, I am on shore.
Yeah, I think it's one, most states are now 1 year working under a CPA, and they have to sort of certify or sign off that you did accounting work, all right, as you would get the experience working in a public accounting firm. But there's still one state, I don't know if you know this, there's still one state where you can actually substitute getting a master's degree for that experience requirement, and that's in Colorado. So if anybody's thinking about taking the CPA exam and doesn't want to deal with that 1 year under a CPA experience or public accounting experience, you might want to look into the state of Colorado. Now, Keith, tell us why, all right, you are working in Pennsylvania, all right? Are you holding yourself out as a CPA in your position?
Say that once again.
All right, you are working in Pennsylvania. You have a CPA from Delaware, correct?
Correct.
All right, now, on your business card, do you use the word CPA?
Yes.
Now, as far as I, is that allowed? I thought you have to actually have a license to practice in the state that you're working. All right. Is that correct? You don't, you have a license in, you don't have a license in Pennsylvania.
I do not have a license in Pennsylvania, but IDS is in New Jersey. And when you use it in the corporate world, there is not such a requirement. So I don't know the requirement that you're speaking of that I know of. Are you saying like putting up a shingle versus working in the corporate world?
For example, I have heard that if you want, even though you take an exam in another state, all right, you have to have a license in the state that you're working, no matter what you do, to have a CPA after your name. Now, maybe that's not the case in Pennsylvania. I don't know every state, Delaware, whatever. I don't know every state's requirements. That's what I'm saying. But
gotcha. I would say honestly, I think that's, to me, silly. They try that portability act where you could work X amount of hours across the chasm to be able to use your license in other states just because of the way the world is today, you know, becoming more area agnostic and you can just be anywhere at any time. So for a CPA, for yourself or myself to go and get licensed in 50 states just because I did a project or did work for someone in California or Alaska would just be pretty silly, I think.
Can you explain that portability? Are you familiar with it?
Well, I know you can do work if you keep under a certain amount of hours in various states. I know it kind of varies. I believe it was 500 hours the last time I looked at it.
Okay.
In various states where, you know, you can do under that amount of work and you don't technically need licensure. I mean, just from talking to other people I've networked with, it's never come up where someone said, I couldn't do something here because I'm not licensed in that state. Or any of those things when it's, you know, a smaller firm perspective. I'm sure at the bigger firms, since they have a presence and it's a lot bigger, I'm sure that they are more sensitive to those things.
Right. Actually, I don't know if you knew this. At some point, I don't know how many years ago, the CPA was not a license. It was a certification. All right. It's only been a license maybe in the last 10, 15 years, which actually, all right, I don't agree with, but that makes no difference what I agree with. But, you know, because they make a license, everyone gets hung up on you having a CPA in one state, and you have to be licensed in that state where you work. Now, I don't know what exactly the rules are, but I'll tell you, I don't think anybody knows the rules because there's so many.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think there's so many differences in every state. There's no uniformity. All right. They have tried for years to get uniformity, a Uniform Accountancy Act, but it just hasn't happened. So anyway, but anyway, you got your MBA, you got certified, you said in 2000, was it 10 or 11? I'm sorry.
11.
All right. Now, when you were certified, before you got certified, all right, what were you working in before you got the CPA?
Well, before the CPA, I was working in a publicly traded company. They're still in existence today, doing very well still.
What company is that?
Synchronous Technologies Incorporated. They're headquartered out of Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Right.
Ticker's SNCR. They're in the telecom space. At the time when I was there, we were doing local number portability, and we also created the bridging software platform that bridged the Singular, which is now AT&T Wireless, with Apple. So we activated every iPhone in America when Apple launched the iPhone. We built that software.
Very good. And you were there 6 years, it looks like. 6 years, 7 months?
7 years. Yep, 7 years.
Yeah, so tell me, what did you like about that job?
It was very entrepreneurial. It was small when I first got there. It was 30 people. I answered an ad on monster.com, as crazy as that sounds. And, you know, it was very small, and then it grew into what it was. It kind of morphed to, it was doing from revenue assurance in a telecom space, and then it kind of morphed into a call center, and then it morphed into doing all these types of add-on services in the voice over IP and cellular space. And now they've morphed into doing data management, white labeling back-end data services for like Verizon, and then also working 5G on these new rollouts for 5G that's coming out, and working across Europe, Asia, and North America. So company has just kept growing, and you know, it's just still good to go check them out.
Why did you leave though? If you sound so good, why'd you leave?
Well, in the finance realm, you know, growing up there, the whole finance organization didn't grow up as fast as the company. And when I say that, it's, they never expanded thinking that working the 100 hours to 120 hours a week was normal, because that's how we did it to go public. That's how we did it to be public. And as we started to acquire more companies and do acquisitions and start targeting and doing diligence, we never expanded the staff. And on a personal level for me, we had our second child, five children. We had our second child, and I looked around and said, I can no longer do this at 100 hours a week. The reason why I was willing to do 100 hour a week is because I had equity in the company, of course, getting stock options and all those things. But I needed to take a step back because I had a young family. So I went to my CFO and said, you know, really need to have more resources. I can no longer work at this pace because little kids depend on me. And that's very important to me. He said he would get us help. And a couple of weeks later, we did not have any help. Presentations went up, said that, you know, we're going to do, you know, 4 to 10 acquisitions in the next 3 years. We're not going to expand anyone in finance. And literally in that meeting, I stood up. When we had lunch break, I said, sir, I gave him my 2 week resignation. I'm out. And I left 2 weeks later.
Now, I'm sorry. What was your position there exactly? Was it a finance or accounting department?
It was an accounting and finance department was gelled together. So it was manager of financial reporting. So internally, it was, you know, budgeting, financial forecasts. And then on the accounting side, it was interacting with the audit. And then also writing your 10-Ks, 10-Qs, MD&A, you know, 8-Ks, all those things. That's what I worked on. So it was a combined position that I had payroll, because we had at that time 250 employees, accounts payable, accounts receivable, everything rolled up into me.
Hmm. Who'd you report to at the company? Who was your immediate?
I reported to the VP of finance at the time. And then there was a CFO. So it was CFO, VP of finance, me. Mm-hmm. One accounts payable clerk, and every once in a while there was like a person who worked 10 hours a week. That was it. And that was a publicly traded company.
You were working 100 hours a week.
Yes.
Now, you might want to, if anybody's listening to this, a lot of people might think going to work for a company is just 9 to 5, all right? And that's not really true, all right? What, I mean, based on your experience and talking to people in the corporate world, what, how many hours a week does an average person work in a position such as that?
In a position in a publicly traded company in that manner, I think in the last 10 years, I've seen a lot of my network and friends and everyone I talk to,
yeah.
It has become a lot better just because the people understand it better now, right? So the typical, I would say, is 50 to 55 hours a week, mm-hmm. but you're never truly turned off, right? Because of just the technology interface that we have today.
Right.
You'll be getting emails to X amount, and of course you're going to be answering emails. It's just what goes on in the jobs that we do, right? But you have to take a step back and actually create that balance for yourself. You know, I have 5 children now, and you know, you have to be a little bit more thoughtful. And when you manage people, which of course I manage people, I'm a huge advocate of everyone's a professional. Everyone can manage their day. So if someone would come to me and say, I want to coach high school basketball, I'd say, great, go do it. Because you only live once, and your kids are only young ones, and you're a professional. So if you leave work at 2:30 today, when you get home at 9 o'clock, you hook up and finish some stuff off, that's great. And you have to give people that leeway, because that's how you keep people, and that's how you keep teams, and that's how, you know, you work with people more than you probably see your family. If you really take a step back and look at it,
that's true.
When you're working in the corporate world, you are with those people more than your family. So you have to treat those people right. And that's how you build a team. That's how you build a great culture on top of it.
So it seems like the thing you least liked about that company was the amount of hours you worked.
The amount of hours, correct. It was, it became the norm, and that's not normal, right? So that's why I raised my hand and had a very frank conversation. And, you know, it just, they were not there yet. And after I left, they did expand. They hired another 6 people, which was awesome. So, you know, I guess that, you know, people point to that point in time and say, look, you did the job of 6 people. And I say, no, probably the job of 3 people. It's just that me leaving kind of opened their eyes and had them kind of look at the organization a lot different, which was good for them, right? So it was impetus not only for me to be good for me and what I needed, but it was also good for that company to have the wake-up call saying, you can't do that to people, and you need to have a little bit more strike the balance for people, organizationally.
The companies don't look at it this way, all right? If you're doing the work of 3 people, they're saving money, okay?
Sure.
Right? And, you know, the question is, are they concerned about their employees, or they just work them to death, all right? I got the idea. Did your company work you to death? Is that how you felt?
I would say yes, and I guess from that perspective at the time, right? So I take a look back and, you know, debrief yourself, and you say, you know, until 2008, I didn't have a formal 4-year college degree.
Mm-hmm.
So the other side of that is, without having that in the marketplace, people value that. At that time, it was valued a lot more. I think today, 11 years, fast forward 11 years later, I think that is truly changing. I mean, me as a hiring manager, I'd hire someone out of college degree, hands down. That's not a requirement to me. So, you know, back then it was kind of, you had to check the box. The same thing was with my MBA. It was more, in the corporate world, it's great to have an MBA, so you check the box, especially if a company's going to pay for it. So you lean into it and you do it, and you put your head down and you do it. Because without that, some people would be like, oh, maybe you don't get certain looks, because people make it a requirement. Like, I know in my career that I've not had looks at certain jobs because I've never worked in the Big 4. I never worked in audit. And, you know, CFOs who are in their 60s and 70s think that's valuable. And then if you really talk to people who are 40 and 50, they really don't care. Because a person working 2 years at KPMG or PwC or Ernst & Young or D&T, that 2 years worth of experience, I don't know. I just don't think it's the experience of working in the corporate world and trying to figure everything out.
There's people who believe
that's pure gold.
Yeah, unless it's changed. I did grunt work when I worked for Seedman & Seedman for the first 2 years. And it was just, you know, the bank recs and nothing that they thought was, you know, too much that I had to think, all right? So no, 2 years in a lot of these companies, you know, these CPA firms, you don't learn a lot. So I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. What is the big deal on that? In fact, I don't see anything wrong. And, you know, I think they're discouraging people from graduating college and then going to work for a corporation, never even stepping into the offices of a CPA firm. But the AICPA is discouraging that because, once again, they're putting that requirement of 1 year working with a CPA or for a CPA, you know, and they go into corporations and these people, you know, you don't always work with a CPA. So, you know, then you're precluding these people from actually becoming CPAs. And it's the same thing with government workers, all right? People who graduated schools went directly to federal state governments. They didn't want to go into public accounting, all right? Well, they have to worry. They go to a government job and they have to work under a CPA for a year. Well, there's another problem. You don't have a CPA a lot of times in a government position. So they're precluding that class of people too. So I totally agree with you. For the first 2 years, all right, working in a big four, you do not get tremendous experience that would actually allow you to do the position that you had. Do you agree?
Correct. You would get more broader experience sitting in a corporation, being potentially, if you're not siloed, be able to touch many things, you know, and learn a lot more processes and just how companies work just in generalities than being the grunt person on the audit team who's doing the heavy lifting and rather than getting more broad knowledge. I've seen people struggle where who've come out of that, I call it audit land. They come out of audit land, they've been with, you know, the big four, the big 10, whatever you want to say, or, you know, regional firms, bigger regional firms, and they try to apply that audit culture to the corporate world when they come out. Like, no one leaves until I leave. That's kind of an old audit thing, right? Where leaves the audit room until I leave the room. No one's allowed to leave. Well, try to apply that in the corporate environment, where there's ebbs and flows in different positions within potentially if you're managing a group of 15 people across three different kind of activities going on, that would never fly. So I worked with a person who had that mentality, and the first week I was with them, and you know, we got pretty friendly pretty quick. I told him, I said, you understand what you're doing is innately wrong. I was like, I understand you worked at, you know, X firm. I said, that's not how it works in the real world. I said, you were in La La Land. You were in audit land. Mm-hmm. I was like, now you're in a corporation. I said, they're distinctly two different things. Well, no one's going to leave until I leave. I'm like, you sound pretty silly, to be honest. Mm-hmm. He's like, how could you say that? That's, you know, that's what they're doing. This is what I've been doing for 6 months. No one told me different. And 3 months later, they took his entire team away from him and they just let him work by himself because he couldn't manage people, but they never coached him either. So it was, you know, he was just ignorant to the fact of not knowing how it works because that's all he knew. Came right out of school with an MBA, worked in public, did that for 10 and a half years, you know, decided to leave because they got gobbled up by other firms as that was all happening in, you know, in the early 2010 to 14 period. Everyone was gobbling up each other across the smaller firms as they were all consolidating. And he went to corporation and failed miserably, but at the same point, they didn't realize how to manage him also and give him any kind of direction. So both failed on both sides. You know, yes. He never knew any different. He never really took the time to figure it out. And the company that we were working for never coached him on the differences in the two lands. So interesting thought process, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at situations in companies, whether it's public or corporate, and some of the things these companies do, it just doesn't make sense. But they do it anyway. You know, it's they don't apply common sense, you know, to say, hey, let's think of the employees, all right? Let's not be so rigid. And that's the problem. Corporations don't see that. Public accounting firms don't see the problems with, for example, overworking their employees. It's just, you know, it's so, you can't overwork your employees. What do you do? You're going to have people coming to work every day who are exhausted? That doesn't make for a good person to come into your office. So,
well, I think one of the mentalities that hopefully changes is that when you start to manage people in either factor, in either environment that we're talking about right now, that you have to take the mentality that you work for them, that they don't work for you. And I think it's always the other way around, right? And I hope that changes here over the time where when you manage people, your job is to, you know, help them. That's your job. That is 50% of your job should be working for them. Maybe even up to 100%, depending on what, you know, what you're in. But 50 to 100% of your job is working for those people. And I think the conversation is the other way. These people are working for me. What are they doing for me? And it really, that conversation never turns around and says, well, what am I doing for these people? Because they're giving a lot to me and I should be giving back to them.
Yeah. I think when someone's a manager, this is my opinion. I don't think that's something you learn. I think that's something that's in you, you know, which means that you have to understand and be, you know, be concerned about people. All right. And if you don't have that concern, I don't care what they train you as a manager or not, you're just not going to make it as a manager because the people have to respect you. All right. And people, you know, respect you when you're fair and you show that you care about them. You know, that's the way I think managers are good managers, not necessarily because they've been trained to be a manager. So how many people do you manage? I'm just curious. How many people do you manage?
Hey, everyone. Really hope you're enjoying this episode of CPA Review and More. And let's face it, if you're anything like us, you probably listen to your fair share of podcasts. And that's exactly why here at Jaeger CPA Review, we've teamed up with Podcoin to bring you a great way of getting paid just for listening to the podcasts you already enjoy. So I know it sounds a little crazy, and I assure you, it's not. Here's how it works. You listen to podcasts such as CPA Review and More, and then you earn Podcoin while you listen. You can turn that Podcoin into gift cards at places like Amazon, Starbucks, or Dunkin' Donuts. Or if you're anything like us here at Team Jaeger, you can donate to a charity right through the Podcoin app. The more you listen, the more you earn. So what are you waiting for? Go to your app store and your iPhone or Android and download the Podcoin app now. Use promo code Jaeger when you sign up, and we'll even give you 300 Podcoin as a thank you just for signing up. In return, Podcoin will give us a little bit of information about the listeners of our podcast who use the Podcoin app, how long they're listening, and which episodes are the most popular. That's it. Check out Podcoin today.
How many people do you manage? I'm just curious. How many people do you manage presently?
Right now, my role, since the company is so small, I don't have any direct reports. But across my career, I've had up to teams of 20 to 25 people at certain times. So it's varied across companies and depending on certain times within companies. As, you know, reorgs happen or, you know, things happen, you get people shifted your way. So, right now, since it's a smaller company, you know, I'm a one-man show, essentially. So, which I'm comfortable with too, and I'm comfortable with a team of 25 people.
You think you're a good manager?
I think I'm a very good manager of people.
Why are you a good manager? Tell me why you think you're a good manager.
Simplicity, empathy, and kindness. I think those are two huge things that you have to understand. The people of everyone's different, and you have to empathize with them at a high level and understand and listen. I think I'm a very good listener where it comes down to listening to people and taking it in, and then just being nice and kind to people. I think it goes a long way. And like I said, where it's, yes, you want to go do these things, I'd advocate for those things. You know, like I said, the high school basketball example, or I'm leaving today to go with my son's baseball game, or my daughter's softball game, or this dance thing, or, you know what, I'm having furniture delivered today. Good. Stay home. Don't even come in. Get your furniture delivered. Do your deal. And if you want to come in, come in. If not, not. And I think that goes a long way, that when something does go up, or when budgeting time comes, or, you know, we have an issue, everyone's there to jump on it. Because it's mutual respect back and forth. I'm going to respect you, and 95% of the time it's gotten back. And yes, there are times where people take advantage of it, right? So that's always one of the big things people say is, oh, people take advantage of it. I said, yeah, then you have a discussion and say, listen, I'm advocating for you. I'm doing all these things for you, and I'm a champion of you, but you're not finishing the work or you're not hitting a deadline, then it's an issue. And I can't continue to advocate and do those things for you if you can't do what we need to get done for our team, because you're letting everyone else pick up a load that's not theirs, or you're just not being kind to the people around you. And, you know, every once in a while, you got to pick up everyone around you. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what being a team is, or being, you know,
you have to be
around all these other people.
It'd be a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, where'd you go from there? What was your next job after that?
After Synchronous?
Yes.
I went to Convatec, which was the largest leverage buyout 2008 from Bristol-Myers Squibb. So it was a division of Bristol-Myers Squibb. They shed that whole company. It was kind of like a silo inside of BMS to get some cash for the Mead Johnson acquisition. So two private equity firms put money together, bought Convatec, and then Uno Medical, which was a distributor slash medical device maker in South America. So that company bought those and squished them together and made Convatec a standalone company. So that company had over 10,000 employees when I got there. 9 manufacturing plants globally, 46 foreign entities. So it was a big global company.
And you were there for 4 years, so you must have liked it. Why did you like it?
For me, it was a very different experience. I'm coming from the guy who wore many hats, did a lot of things at Synchronous, to being in a role where at first it was, your job is to support the North America's division. So it was the commercial division, right? So it was a finance, it was a accounting manager role inside of the commercial finance piece of the business. That was Americas and turning to North Americas. So for me, it was very different because now I didn't have to do accounts payable. There was a team of like 25, 30 people. I didn't have to do AR. There was a team of 6 people. I didn't have to do anything with tax. There was an entire tax team. I didn't have to do anything with financial reporting. There was a whole financial reporting team. So for me, the experience was very different, and it gave me global exposure on top of it very fast because the company had a one-year SLA with Bristol-Myers saying that you have 1 year to use all of our systems, and you know, 1 year from this date, all the systems get turned off. You have to be standalone by yourself. So I was part of the foundation team. They called it their SAP Foundation, which was the ERP rollout. I was part of that also as another part of my job was to do that along with support the North America's commercial division.
Now, is that where you determined with America's finance? Did you determine on that job, ConvaTech, that's when you had to get the CPA?
Yes.
So Why?
Because here was opportunity, right? So I go from working 100 to 115 hours, 120 hours a week to working 45 because now all this work is spread out and there's lots of people. So literally that decompression allowed me to take a look and say, how do I fill this time all of a sudden? Because I was so used to working in that manner. I was like, well, what do I do with this extra time now besides, you know, fill it with family time? But what am I going to do at 10:30 at nighttime to 1 in the morning when I'm still awake? So I said, well, you know, maybe I do the CPA. So I started looking at those things. I said, okay, I'm going to do the CPA. So that's kind of the impetus behind it. And I said, well, you know, career progression at the time, it's like, okay, well, I just got my accounting degree. I went to this global company. And you know what? Most people are doing the CPA and they're going to pay for it. So might as well do it. They're going to pay for my, at the time, Becker CPA review stuff. And
I'm sorry, you know, we don't take that name. Rob, what do you think of that name?
Jaeger is the only name we want to hear on this.
That's okay.
We're talking the old timer here. This guy did it 10
yes.
years ago. Yes, for me, yes.
Okay. By the way, how old are you? May I ask you?
41.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Are you planning retirement yet? Just curious.
I've been planning retirement for 5 years, yes.
Okay. All right. What is that, winning the lottery? How are you going to do that?
I have a different definition of retirement. So my definition of retirement is doing what you want when you want to. So very different than retiring and not working. I think I'll work my entire life. I think it's good to work your entire life. That's just me. That's just how I'm wired and built. I don't foresee myself, you know, sitting around doing crossword puzzles and golfing. Just not me. So,
well, how are you going to get to that definition of doing whatever you want when, in other words, you have control of your life totally, right? If you don't
Correct.
Want something today, you don't have to do it. All right. That sounds like self-employment to me. Is that what you want? Do you want to be a self-employed person or you want to stay in the corporate world?
I would go to the self-employment piece when I feel I'm ready to do that. Correct.
Okay.
I tilt into it full time. Absolutely. 100%.
All right.
But that's how I'm wired. A lot of people are not wired in that sense. A lot of people shy away from that, you know, because they think there's safety in working in the corporate world and it's an illusion to me that you're just potentially just a number. No one honestly cares. And you can be let go tomorrow. So to be beholden to anyone else, people think that there's safety in working for someone versus working for yourself. So maybe my eyes were rubbed a little differently about 7-8 years ago. And I understand that. So,
well, that was the mentality when I graduated college. I figured I went to a company and, you know, I remember the day I started this company and I said, gee, I only have another, let me see, I have to work till I'm 65. So I have another 43 years to go. That's what I said. All right. And I thought about, well, I'll be here for 43 years. Now, I never thought to think, hey, there was not going to be a situation where this company was not going to keep me. And of course, I was going to be loyal to them. All right. That's not the case. You're absolutely right. That might have been the case years and years ago, but not anymore. Right?
No,
it is.
I'm loyal to myself. And I say this to people, and people kind of still look at me a little sideways when I say, you've always worked for yourself. You just never noticed it. I was like, for the last 10 years, I've always approached a job that I am like a 1099 contractor. I could be let go today, or I can leave myself, period. And I think, you know, people are like, well, that's not loyalty. I'm like, but you understand that sometimes when you get to a place, they're not very loyal to you either, to your point. There's loyalty is a two-way street. Most of the time, corporations don't have the loyalty pointed towards the worker either. And I mean, that's really the story of Convatec. One of the reasons I left was they were just, new management came in and they started just shedding costs. It's that corporate, you know, there's a book of how you, you know, private equity and you strip all the costs out and you maximize everything. Someone read a book. I felt like someone read a book in the summertime and then executed on a strategy of you just start ripping costs out. You start ripping infrastructure out. You skinny it up. You make EBITDA go up and then you try to sell it to somebody. But the whole thing is broken when you're trying to sell it. I mean, there are management books built around that in the property world or let's say roadmaps or game plans that will tell you, you know, you strip this, this, and this out. You make this, you pretty it up, you put lipstick on the pig, and operationally it's a mess, but EBITDA looks great. You get your multiple and you exit.
Yeah, a lot of companies, as you know, also, you're working there and then you reach a certain age and then they look at you and say, you know, we could get someone younger doing the same work. And
I agree. I've seen it before. Correct.
And they seem to forget that person, you can't replace their knowledge, their experience. That doesn't seem to be the thing anymore. Corporations will get rid of you. They look at you as, well, are you worth what we're paying you? Yeah, we'll get someone else. You know, they'll do the same work and we'll pay them a lot less. That is terrible. But that's the way it is today, the corporate world. That's why I could never work for anybody. I've been a self-employed person for 40 some odd years. So, I mean, yes, sometimes you say to yourself,
God, that is awesome.
A lot of stress.
Yes, but it's awesome because you did it on your terms. My way, like Frank Sinatra would say, right?
Yeah, can you sing that song for, no, I'm just kidding. Anyway.
It would be a beautiful duet. You have a great voice.
I'm glad you noticed that. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've been offered several labels, label companies to sing. Or is it to not sing? I'm not sure which one it is. But
no. I think they pay you to not sing.
Thank you, Rob. All right. Your job is just to introduce the show and exit the show. All right. So anyway.
All right. I'm going to go back to my nap then.
No, go back. No, but, you know, actually, can you today come out of school without a degree, a bachelor's degree? And get positions like you might have had earlier on?
I think right now, no, because there's still the gatekeepers, what they believe is the way to be. And I think that that's flipping over as the education system is archaic and people see it as very different. I think that's all coming to light. And I think over the next 10 years, you'll see a major flip to that. Like I know Ernst & Young has dropped the requirement because you have a lot of people, to your point, what you were talking about before, institutional knowledge or just knowledge of industries that never went to college that you're leaving, you're excluding them from.
What do you mean Ernst & Young dropped the requirement? What requirement did they drop?
That you needed a college degree. Now, I think that's more in their consultancy side than the accounting auditing side. Because remember, they're more, when you look at those big four firms now, the consulting arms are driving a lot of the revenue side. So when you look at that, and you talk to partners at Ernst & Young, I talked to one just recently, and they lean more into the consulting side than they do from going out and getting audit and tax engagements at this point. Those things are just not money makers compared to where they could take consultants across business operations and implementation, and those types of engagements are money makers compared to an audit engagement where you're doing a fixed price and then putting all these billable hours against it, right? In the consulting side, you have the more flexibility, say it's X per hour, and as you bring more resources to the table, you can go back and get more dollars. So they know where their margins truly are. And I think they're morphing too. That's why like in EY, they dropped that. Now, I'm sure on the accounting tax side that they still lock it down.
Yeah.
But as a company, if they're implementing, you know, an Oracle ERP and they need an Oracle expert who potentially didn't go to college and just got certified, before they were excluding them because they didn't have a college education, but they could have been an Oracle master, or they could have been a Cognos person who just did Cognos for 10 years, who had that institutional knowledge of everything Cognos, and they needed on engagements, and they would preclude them before because they didn't have a four-year degree. But you're leaving that specific knowledge and that great talent out of your pool because you're saying you need this piece of paper that says you went to school for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of companies will start looking and saying, that seems pretty silly, because what if you really niched down and you really learned your craft and you're an expert and you didn't go to college? What does that look like? And should that preclude you from being in the talent pool? You could be leaving an expert off the table. And I think that they're starting to realize, I think a lot of people are starting to realize that now, that even in the accounting world, that you could take people, bring them on board. Let's say if they have a business degree and not an accounting degree, or even a liberal arts degree, and train them to do accounting.
That's what they're doing. They're doing that.
Correct. And I think 10 years ago, that would have been off the table. I think it's starting to change. And I think the next level would be, oh, you don't even have a degree, or maybe have some college. Okay. And I mean, think about me. I got hired at a company with just having a two-year degree. I got hired at a company before that doing accounting just because I answered an ad in a newspaper. Like, is it luck? Sure. Did I interview well? Sure. There's some people who are super talented, interview horrible. They have a horrible day and they'll never get a shot, right? So there's tons of variables. But I think the overarching thing is, I think that people know that the education system's archaic, and the internet, you can go read about a lot of things and learn a lot of things that you can even learn in college. So, you know, and then practicality, put them into fruition and actually do them and continuously work on them, like getting a free copy of QuickBooks and doing bookkeeping for somebody. Do you know how many bookkeepers I've met that did that and don't have accounting degrees, yet they have bookkeeping firms that they do $300,000-$400,000 a year in business, and they never went to college? And then there's a person who went to college and got a CPA MBA who's sitting in a corporate office right now making $90,000 a year and spent 6 years in college. Just, which is the better pathway? Don't know. It depends on the person. Who's making more money? The person without the college degree, the person without a CPA, and the person that doesn't have an MBA. I can point out a lot of those people in the accounting space too. So,
well, I totally agree with you. And that's sort of like today, you know, to take the CPA exam, you have to have beyond a bachelor's degree as far as credits.
Correct. Almost a master's, right? Almost a master's. It seems like you need to almost.
Yeah. Is that really necessary? I don't think so.
I don't think so. You could be super smart in accounting and not need your MBA, right? You could just get it and understand it.
Yeah. I mean, I got out of school to sit in Maryland. You only had to have a bachelor's degree in accounting and no experience requirement to get the CPA. Now, years have gone by. Am I any worse off? Am I a dumb CPA? No. All right. But there's always a question, why'd they ask the 150? Why'd they add the 150 hours? All right. Why did they make this experience requirement so difficult? And the answer is just to make things difficult. I really believe that. You know,
I think the intention was to make it more of a specialty, to make more value to the designation. And I can see how someone's intent was to do that, but I think it locks out a lot of people from potentially going down the road to do it, to your point earlier, of maybe some people don't do it because then people can't work under a CPA. So, you know, there's lots of people lately that I've seen that have, you know, posted, I passed the CPA exam, but they can't find that person to work for to get that 1 year experience.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. So after you see 100 people post that, and, you know, you're on Instagram or Facebook and you're part of the groups and you see people post on LinkedIn and they're just like, I still can't find somebody to, you know, get the requirements, or, you know, I passed the exam and I'm like 4 months away from losing, you know, the credit because the credits start to fall off. Mm-hmm. That's scary.
Yeah.
Because like, you did all that hard work, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, a lot of studying. You know, I still remember falling asleep and waking up and drooling all over my, you know, my review material and my keyboard and, you know, literally falling asleep and just hitting my head on the desk and just being totally zonked out, studying to 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, do all that hard work and then not be able to get the designation because the hours thing. Yeah. I mean, people hear that and then people just won't do it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Different generation.
That's
also. It's a different generation also. Mm. They won't do the things that maybe I did or you did. So, but anyway, Keith, I could talk to you another hour, I'm sure. I just want to ask you, tell us about your present job and what you're doing in that job.
Sure. So presently, I work for Delivery Sciences. They are a specialty pharmaceutical company in the pain space, specific to opioids.
Can you repeat that? We sort of lost you on that. What's the name of the company?
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. What's the name of the company?
Yep. Inspirion Delivery Sciences. We are a specialty pharmaceutical company in the pain space, specifically in the opioid space. And then on top of that, we have an abuse deterrent formulation. So we have two drugs that are approved by the FDA. One's launched. One is going to be launching here within Q4 of this year or Q1 of next year. And it's the abuse deterrent formulation. It doesn't allow people to get an instant high when they crush it. It doesn't allow them to melt it down and inject it from an opioid perspective. So it's a very niche drug, very neat technology. We're looking for other applications and how to put that across more chasms than just the opioid space.
Is that a painkiller you're talking about?
Yeah, so OxyContin and morphine. So it's OxyContin with our formulation on top of it. So I'll give you an example of how people abuse it at a high level. So, you know, you get a prescription, you leave it in the cabinet, kids come along, they take it out, they crush it, they snort it to get a high, yeah. Right? Our drug, you snort it, and that instant release drug that usually would give you a high, the molecule changes to do an extended release over a 12-hour period. Mm. So kids can't get the instant high that they would from doing that. And then some people try to take it, melt it, liquefy it on a spoon, and then try to syringe it and inject it in their bodies. Ours coagulates that it can't do that. It becomes very lumpy, so you can't. It's not injectable, where people would then take OxyContin or morphine and melt it down to inject it directly into their bodies.
Right. Well, sounds like something that could be helpful to this opioid crisis that we're having.
Correct. I mean, at first, two years ago, it was people started talking about it. Massachusetts was looking at laws to implement that all abuse deterrent formulations go first on formulary. They've kind of backed off that because now anything in the space is just demonized. So we're part of the demonization of opioids, but we're really the company that's helping bridge the gap between correct use and abuse at the end of the day. So we're like the bridge. We're the bridge technology. You could still get addicted to any opioid at any time, of course, right? I mean, it's just the nature of the drug, except that you can't abuse ours in the manner that people are abusing them.
Well, I hope that gets to market really soon, that second one. I don't know what takes some
time.
Is that the FDA? You're waiting for FDA approval?
That is correct. And it's actually not the drug itself. It's actually the place where it's manufactured is waiting for final approval. So the drug itself has been approved. We have FDA approval, but the site that we're manufacturing at, we're just waiting for the final FDA approval for that.
Well, let's hope it goes through. I think it'll help substantially.
I think it'll help the space, yeah. Correct.
Tremendous. Yes. But anyway, Keith, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on and continued success at your job. And I hope you find that position one day where you can control your life and work when you want to work. Okay?
Absolutely.
Is that right? Control your life, work when you want to work. Is that it?
Yep. That is correct.
And you know what? You can get it anytime. All right. People think when they reach 41, you know, if they haven't done something by that date, all right, it's all over. But you still, that's a young age you're at. And you sound like you have a very nice family, 5 children. And it sounds great. I wish you the best. You seem like a very nice gentleman. And
thank you very much.
And thank you for being on our podcast. I think people will get a lot of information, useful information out of this podcast. Okay.
I hope they do. And anyone can contact me at any time. I'm very easy to find out there. I'm on LinkedIn, just Keith James. Same thing with Instagram and Facebook. You'll find me out there. And, I always like to have conversations and engage in our little community of CPAs and people studying for the CPA and give encouragement to all those people. If you're going to do it, go for it. Get it done. It's worth it. I mean, it's been a big part of my life to do it. And, you know, I think the community can only get better over time. And it's only as good as what we all put into it at the end of the day.
Well said. Well, thank you very much, Keith. Appreciate it. And Rob, take it away, please.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear on the show, or If you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your story, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to the studio at podcast@JaegerCPAReview.com. If you're enjoying the content that we're providing, we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd submit a review to the Apple iTunes podcast app to let us know how we're doing. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to find out more about the CPA exam and what Jaeger has to offer, check out JaegerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you may have. The link and the phone number will be in the description of this podcast. Here at Team Jaeger, we're excited to tell you about our new Jaeger CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Jaeger CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no-commitment subscription format. Check it out today. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your executive producer and director here at the Jaeger Studios. And until next time, take care and be audit you can be.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to CPA Review. And more with Phil Jaeger.
Rob is my executive producer. I just give him the title. He really doesn't mean anything to me, but I give him the title.
Ouch.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You really like
Jeff. He's the director of technology services.
Is that what his title is?
Yeah.
Who gave you that title? Where'd you steal that title from? All right. I gave you a
custodial help. All right.
Yes.
Who did you give that one to? Me or Keith?
Excuse me. Can you get my coffee over here? I don't have my coffee yet.
I think you're on your own on that one, Phil.
Yeah. Okay. So, Keith, where are you, in New Jersey?
I am in Pennsylvania, the Poconos.
You're in the Poconos?
Well, remember that
have we spoken? We have spoken, yes. Have we not?
Yes.
We spoke. Yes?
Yep.
About 2 weeks ago, Phil.
Yeah, I remember the Poconos. Nice time of year to be in the Poconos.
This guy, Phil, suffers from something called short-term memory loss at times.
Yes. Listen, Rob. how far are you from the resort area?
Right in the middle of it, pretty much.
Do you go, what do you do during, if you take a vacation during the summer, do you go to the Poconos? Where do you go?
I go to Ocean City, Maryland.
Oh, God. I've never been there. You know, I've never been there. I lived here for, God, how many years? 41 years, and I've never been there.
You got to go there. Great vacation.
Isn't it sort of crowded?
No.
Wait a minute, which Ocean City are you talking about?
New Jersey, Ocean City, Maryland.
That's what I'm talking about. Rob?
Yeah, it's not that crowded.
Rob, you been to Ocean City?
I have.
Is it crowded?
It was not that bad. I've been to Ocean City and Assateague Island.
Okay.
It really depends on when you go. It really does.
Yeah, we go in the second week, the third week of August, we go for 2 weeks. And, you'll wait if you go to dinner at, if you go to dinner at 5 o'clock, you'll wait an hour to sit. If you go to dinner at 7 o'clock, you might wait 30 minutes to sit at most of the restaurants. The beaches, as long as you stay away from the higher rises on the lower streets, and you go on the upper side of Ocean City, the north side of Ocean City, Maryland, where everything's like maybe 10 to 15 stories, the beaches are pretty open because there's not a lot of people there.
See, I have no idea where you're talking about because I've never been there. So it's
towards Delaware.
Yeah. No, I know where.
But you stay more towards the Delaware side than at the boardwalk.
Right.
You'll have a better experience.
So where were you born? In Pennsylvania?
Queens, New York.
Oh, good. I think I know that area. Do you know where I'm from? I don't know if I told you. Did I?
You were from New York, I believe.
Yeah, I'm from Long Island.
Long Island, yep.
Long Island. Say that again. I love that. Long Island.
Long Island.
Right. No, I lived in Valley Stream and Lynbrook, not far from Queens.
Yep, my aunt Veronica lived in Valley Stream. Used to go visit her there.
Really? You don't remember what area? Do you remember what area? Or
I used to get off by that Valley Stream Mall there.
Green Acres?
Yes, Green Acres Mall. There you go. Yep, the mall.
You got off and went up Sunrise Highway, right?
Yep, she lived right off Sunrise Highway, correct.
And now I went to Valley Stream South High, which was right behind Green Acres Shopping Center.
Okay.
But even though I went to Valley Stream South, we lived in Lynbrook. We were in the Valley Stream School District, which never made sense, but, you know, we just went. And, yeah, I mean, I loved Long Island growing up there. Great place. We had everything you could ask for. And if you wanted to go into the city, very short bus ride. We take the bus to Jamaica, and then I take the subway into Manhattan.
Gotcha. You want to drive across the Long Island parking lot to get there?
I mean, the Long Island Distress Way?
The LIE, yeah, the Long Island parking lot.
We call it the Long Island Distress Way. You ever heard that? Obviously not, Keith. Okay. Yep. So anyway, all right. Rob, how are we doing time-wise?
We're good to start whenever you are.
Okay, I am ready. Keith, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, record.
Okay, Rob, take it away.
3, 2, 1. You're listening to another episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. If you're joining us for the first time, we'd like to thank you for joining us for this show. And if you're joining us as a repeat listener, we continually, gradually appreciate your listenership. Just for any future listeners who have been following us, we are in the process of setting up a Patreon account. So if you're enjoying the show, you can actually show your support by sponsoring the show and have your name listed at the end of each episode. Without further ado, I'm going to pass the microphone on over to Phil.